Welcome to the LSE Library exhibition marking 100 years since the publication of Bronislaw Malinowski's Argonauts of the Western Pacific. Right now, we're stood in the exhibition space of the British Library of Political and Economic Sciences in the Lionel Robbins Building. This building opened in 1916, when it served as the headquarters and warehouse for W.H. Smith. In that same year, Bronislaw Malinowski received the title of Doctor of Sciences. By then, he'd already spent 2 years in the Trobriand Islands researching for Argonauts of the Western Pacific. Over 100 years later, this library is one of the largest in the world devoted to economics and social sciences. When I think about the influence of Malinowski on LSE, I'm reminded of a philosophy problem. It goes like this. A student visits a university on an open day. The guide shows them the library, the lecture halls, the students' union. And at the end of the tour, the student turns around and says, "Great, where's the campus?" The point of this little experiment is that a campus isn't one singular building, but a bunch of elements which collectively create something more than their parts. In the same way, LSE as an institution is a collection of ideas passed between academics and students, building on each other to create a way of seeing the world. Malinowski played both roles at LSE. If you head over to the first plinth, you'll see a photo of Malinowski from around 1914. He's just 30 here. I guess people used to look older. And he's 2 years away from receiving his doctorate. He's a student, but he's also on the cusp of writing Argonauts of the Western Pacific, a book which would lay down the foundations not only of anthropology, but also for LSE's perspective on social sciences. In this same display case, you can see a flyer for an event which Malinowski hosted called Primitive Economics. Starting out as an economist, Malinowski was interested in going to the Trobriand Islands because he wanted to study the economies of non-Western societies. What he wanted to understand was how you arrange debt in communities without markets or money. From this starting point, Malinowski cultivated a view on social structures called functionalism. This view argues that institutions of a society fulfill the needs of that society. In the case of Argonauts, Malinowski showed how the Kula Ring served to maintain social ties through debt. On this same plinth, you can see some of Malinowski's original notes on Kula. The Kula Ring is a ritual exchange of bracelets and necklaces between groups of people who lived on the Trobriand Islands. From the outside, these exchanges seem to make no sense. Sailing to make these trades was treacherous, and what's more, the bracelets had no value in exchange for other items, like food. So, what need does that fulfill? Many who came before Malinowski thought it didn't serve any function, calling it irrational superstition. But it's here where Malinowski's major contribution to anthropology is made clear. Prior to Malinowski's expedition, much of the information anthropologists worked with came from colonial officers or hobbyist explorers. However, Malinowski wasn't content to take second-hand information. Instead, he chose to spend months, and ultimately years, in the Trobriands. As a result, he didn't just observe Kula exchanges once. He saw them many times. He saw as relationships between the islands and their inhabitants changed. And as a result, he was able to conclude that the Kula Ring managed social relationships. Being involved in the Kula meant maintaining good relations with other islands, and conversely, exclusion from Kula could be used as a punishment. In a society without courts, social exclusion was the justice system. Through this approach, Malinowski pushed back on the idea that societies like the Trobriand Islands were pre-economic. This helped to challenge the widespread view that non-European societies were savage. Further, Malinowski's understanding of Kula suggested that exchange, and as a result economic models, were the basis upon which culture and society were built. This viewpoint continues to be a defining one for LSE. In 1976, when they took over this building from W.H. Smith and turned it into this library, they chose to name it after the economist Lionel Robbins, who famously defined economics as the science which studies human behavior as a relationship between ends and scarce means which have alternative uses. That sounds a lot like functionalism to me.
On plinth number two,
there are a few photos which appear in the original Argonauts of the Western Pacific, including one titled "A Cooler Fleet Halting to Perform the Final Rites of Mursila." In the photograph, you can see a fleet of canoes silhouetted against the horizon. They've stopped here, just off the coast of the island of Duba, to prepare themselves to meet for cooler exchange. One last magical rite before their arrival. In the front left, we can see two figures wading ashore to collect leaves for this final summoning of magical forces. After an arduous and treacherous journey, this photo shows us a moment of calm. And we're able to know about the danger and fear the Trobriandes faced, thanks to Malinowski's accounts. For example, listen to this description. "And indeed, the scenery here, on the borderland of two different worlds. A darkened sea lay to the north. Big thunderclouds hanging over where I knew there was a large flat island of Boyowa. To the south, against a clearer sky, were the abrupt forms of the mountains, scattered over half the horizon. The scenery seemed saturated with myth and legendary tale, with the strange adventures, hopes and fears of generations of native sailors. As I sat there, looking towards the southern mountains, so clearly visible, yet so inaccessible, I realized what must be the feelings of the Trobriandes, desirous to reach Koya, to meet the strange people there, and to cooler with them. A desire made perhaps even more acute by the mixture of fear. But though the legendary dangers on the distant shores may appall the native imagination, the perils of actual sailing are even more real. The sea over which they must travel is seamed with reefs, studded with sandbanks and coral rocks awash. Working on this exhibition gave me a chance to return to the text of Argonauts of the Western Pacific for the first time since my undergrad. I was struck by the vividness of the description. Years before concepts like thick description or the anthropologist as author, Malinowski attempted to let his readers experience the Trobriand Islands through images like these and their accompanying descriptions. Many of these photos were taken by Malinowski's friend, Billy Hancock. The pair, in fact, often took photos of each other in identical poses. If you look in this case, you can see a man in a trilby taking photos of five boys sat on a log. That's Billy. And yes, there is another version of this photo with Malinowski in the same position. And actually, this fact reveals another criticism of Malinowski. Remember, Malinowski was an early social scientist, and therefore believed in the possibility of objectivity. These photos were not intended to give us an impression of island life, but to reflect reality. These setups reveal that, in truth, many of the photos from Argonauts of the Western Pacific were posed. In his diary, Malinowski reflects on this, saying that he often took up to 3 hours to set up these photos. You can see here one of the most famous Malinowski photos. He sat with 4 Trobriand Islanders, each of them holding a gourd of some kind. This photo really shows how strange Malinowski must have seemed to them, turning up out of nowhere, dressed like this, and living among them. Given what we know, it's kind of fun to imagine how many times these men were made to pose here by Billy, and for how long they had to sit here. You can almost see the boredom. The gourds they're holding in their laps are called lime pots, which, unsurprisingly, contain lime. The lime is mixed with betel nut and pepper flour. The mix of these three creates a mild stimulant. So what this photo shows is the equivalent of some mates having a coffee. What can we conclude about Malinowski's field photography? I think, like most of Malinowski's legacy, it's mixed. There are questions about ethics, consent, and the possibility of objectivity. Still, without him, we wouldn't be able to experience these worlds. And without his example to build on, we wouldn't know what questions to ask. Even so, what do we do with a thinker like Malinowski? More specifically, what happened when his private thoughts were exposed for anyone to see? If you head over to Plinth 3, you'll see a picture of Malinowski in his tent. Malinowski lived in a tent like this one for stretches of up to 6 months, right there on the beach. It's unsurprising, I suppose, to see the islanders crowded around his tent. He must have been quite the sight, arriving by canoe with his tent and trunk, dressed all in white, like how we imagine colonial-era explorers. But Malinowski insisted that this was the only way to truly understand other cultures. He wrote in Argonauts, "Proper conditions for ethnographic work. These, as said, consist mainly in cutting oneself off from the company of other white men and remaining in as close contact with the natives as possible. And, by means of this natural intercourse, you learn to know him. You become familiar with his customs and beliefs far better than when he is a paid and often bored informant." And here, I'm afraid, is where we have to part ways with the idealized Malinowski of Argonauts. Malinowski talked a big game about his integration into island life and his disdain for paying for informants, but the reality is somewhat less rosy. In 1967, Malinowski's diary from his time in the field was released. See, it turns out the Trobriand Islanders didn't really like him. He often had to bribe them with tobacco to get them to talk to him. Not only that, but large sections of the diary show Malinowski spoke with disdain about the islanders, frequently using racial slurs, including the N-word. On this plinth, we also see a letter between Malinowski's widow, Valletta Swan, and the diary's publisher. In it, we can see Swan arguing that Malinowski's use of the N-word should be contextualized with a note in the final publication, clarifying that he wasn't in fact a racist. She felt that without this note, the diary would be too detrimental to Malinowski's legacy. In the end, the diary was published in full, slurs and all, and the note did little to prevent the uproar. Malinowski's contemporary Evans Pritchard called the diary gross, and the press, as shown in a clipping on this plinth, questioned the conclusions of a man who so clearly loathed his informants. The diary left the anthropological world with a question. If even Malinowski could not live up to the foundational ideas of the tradition, should it exist at all? The diary, and its fallout, became a driving force in the turn towards positionality in anthropology. If even Malinowski was susceptible to racial bias, if the discipline could not be neutral, then anthropologists would have to look at their own subjectivities in the eye. To this day, anthropologists frequently write sections of their text describing their position and how it affects their reading of culture. Positionality, as it's called, alongside extended fieldwork, has become a foundational concept within the discipline. In a way, we have Malinowski to thank for both. Speaking of legacy, let's move to Plinth 4. Here, I want to focus on a document titled Memorandum on Colonial Research. In it, he admonishes colonial authorities for their approach to law and policy, which are only concerned with the profits of the colony. He suggests that all colonial officers be trained in anthropology. To me, this is concerning. Whilst in various places Malinowski defends the rights of native people, he still implicitly approves of colonial rule here. Worse, he argues that anthropologists should play a role in the colonizing mission. Malinowski's legacy is certainly a complex one, but here I think it's easy to point out that he was wrong. However, what I find most interesting in this memo is this part. A general knowledge of primitive social organization can be acquired in an ordinary course of social anthropology, but a specific understanding of primitive law is more difficult. For here, the older anthropology has been under the sway of certain dogmatic assumptions. Even now, such a generally acknowledged authority as Rivers speaks about universal primitive communism and the absence of individual rights and claims. Some argue that the seminal moment of British anthropology was Notes and Queries on Anthropology, which was published in 1912 by Julian Pitt Rivers, the same Rivers who Malinowski critiques here. It was River's theoretical model which Malinowski put into practice on the Trobriand Islands. And yet, we see here that they fundamentally disagreed. Rivers thought that so-called savage societies existed outside the societal rules and structures. Malinowski, as we've seen, disagreed. There were no societies that lacked structure. You just had to look properly. Just as we critique Malinowski, he pushed back against his teachers and contemporaries like Pitt Rivers. It's not just that we should criticize Malinowski, we must. As I argued at the start of this tour, that ongoing dialogue with the past is how academic knowledge grows. As a result, we can trace the roots of anti-colonial, self-reflexive anthropology to Malinowski and his flawed approach. One way to trace that genealogy is through Malinowski's students. Even as Malinowski worked to uphold colonial rule, he inspired two of his students to dismantle it. In 1934, Malinowski taught Z.K. Matthews, who went on to become a prominent South African academic and mentor to Nelson Mandela. A year later, Jomo Kenyatta studied at LSE before becoming the first president of post-colonial Kenya. And these examples come from just the first generation of Malinowski's students. Over 100 years later, we're still feeling the ripples of Malinowski's influence. Virtually every anthropologist currently working owes something to the legacy of Malinowski, the good and the bad. Malinowski's Argonauts of the Western Pacific was the first line in a story written by students and academics as they push and pull against each other towards knowledge. A story which continues to be written.